Hey y'all, welcome to Cross Politic. We are live. This is Live with Pastor Toby, Chuck Knox, Waterboy, and Mr. Paul Vaughn.
In the studio.
If you guys don't know who Paul Vaughn is, we've had him on the show before, but he's part of, what are we calling you guys? Like the Tennessee 11? Is that what it is?
It varies in numbers depending on the felons or the misdemeanors. Tennessee 6, Tennessee 10, okay. Tennessee 11.
So he was arrested for pro-life activism. In Tennessee.
This is like becoming the show where all the Christian outlaws show up.
I know. That's true.
It's a cave of Medulla. You've been arrested? Come to Cross Politic.
The cave of Medulla. That's right.
You want it also? Yeah, we're one and two. Hey, have you ever experienced a workplace that's like an out-of-tune orchestra? Maybe you're in one right now. Okay.
That was me doing
that. I usually shoot things that sound like that.
One thing is for sure, a dysfunctional workplace is absolutely draining. Now we have an opportunity for you to escape the chaos and join a tribe that's as invested in your success as you are. Mm. I'm talking about one of our partners here at Cross Politic, Story Real Estate, here in Moscow. I literally was waiting to find out who I was talking
about. Who is this?
I've never read this ad before in my life. Go to storyrealestate.com, click menu, and then join our team to apply. They're looking for folks to join them.
Yeah.
Story Real Estate. They're great
they're
folks.
Growing.
Yeah. Wait. There's one more. Oh. God the Father is waiting and looking down the road for all his prodigal sons to return. Will prodigal America return to the Father in repentance, confessing that Jesus Christ is Lord? Or will we fall to our own destruction and become a pillar of salt as a memorial for other nations? Join us this Reformation weekend, October 31st to November 2nd, in Fort Worth, Texas, for the annual Fight Laugh Feast conference. This year's theme is Prodigal America. Where does America need to repent? And the answer is everywhere.
All sorts of places.
You'll spend the weekend hearing from George Grant, Dusty Deaver, Steve Dace, James White, Doug Wilson. Man, I'm excited.
Who is coming to that conference?
I mean, I'm excited. We're going to do a live show at the end with special guests. We're going to be singing psalms.
Yeah.
Bring your families. It's a very family-friendly conference. Always love it when you see like all the little playpens and, you know, the little, you know, pack.
We love the kids.
On the sidelines.
And we let the kids at the end. At least we did this last year. I don't know if you guys approve of this year. You didn't really approve of it last year, but
he just makes up traditions.
All these vendors, sponsors, passed out a bunch of squishy balls last year to our kids.
Yeah.
And then after the live show, we let them all come up and throw them at us. And the kids were so excited.
I think Stephen Wolf got hit in the head.
That they wouldn't even let us finish the show. And they came up as Knox is closing it out.
Yeah,
we got to
get
video footage of that. Were you working on that or someone was?
ProdigalAmerica.com. Register today. There's like early registration benefits still going on. Of course, if you're a club member, you get $100 off or there's some discount.
$50 off, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, per
kind of like 100, but only 50.
For the first two. Yep.
Yeah. But anyways, a sign up. The earlier you sign up, the cheaper it is. Hope to see you there. ProdigalAmerica.com.
Why are you looking at me?
Well, I finished the ad. Now it's your turn.
What am I supposed to say?
You're just going to, I don't know, just kind of, you know, part of
you're supposed to introduce our guest.
We're live right
Paul,
now.
Paul Vaughn, we're grateful to have you with us. There's usually like a bio or something, but there's no bio here for you. So
not for people who are potentially in
infamous
person of interest.
Yes, I gotta be careful what
it's
I can
past
say.
That.
His lawyer isn't here yet.
It's past that,
so
Toby.
We gotta be careful about.
But we can say you're from Tennessee. You're heavily involved in the pro-life work, protecting babies in Tennessee for many years.
Yep.
Head of.
Personhood Tennessee.
Personhood Tennessee.
With Personhood Alliance nationally.
Okay. Very good. So, and also internet service provider on the side.
That's it.
Okay.
A day job.
When the FBI is not showing up at your house.
Correct.
Okay.
His lawyer just texted me and he can't make it.
Okay.
Because he's fighting.
Sorry.
He's fighting.
That's right. Paul, I think it would be helpful to start at the beginning. I know that we've talked with you about this before. Many people might know the story, but I think it would be really helpful to just tell us, okay, so what happened? When was the protest that that instigated all of this? Mm-hmm. Take us to the FBI raid, and then we'll talk about the court legal situation.
So it's a long arc, right? So March of 21 was the event in question.
March 21.
And is a, you know, large regional event, if you will, few people from out of state.
Planned Parenthood?
At a Carafim clinic.
Okay.
So DKT International, big almost as big as Planned Parenthood, international, big organization, well-funded, lots of government money floating around.
Yeah.
So, you know, usual crowd, outside praying, sidewalk counseling, talking to people. It's a multi-tenant building. We're inside the building, in the hallways, public hallways where people can come. No harm, no foul there.
Right.
And then they didn't want us in the building because we were protesting. And so the police come and do the thing. There's a handful of people wanted to, as a matter of conscience, identify with the babies. Right? They wanted to do what back in the day was a rescue back in the 90s where they'd sit down at the doors, kind of First Amendment sit-in protest.
Okay.
Okay. Handful of people arrested, 12, I think, a couple minors that were ticketed. And everybody ended peacefully. We talked to the media.
And you were not among those people.
That's very correct. Yeah, okay. I talked to the police officers. All I did is sing hymns, talked to the police officers, helped the minors find their parents afterwards, and went home and went to the jail and prayed for those who were arrested, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. So we have Hamas protests going on right now.
Right.
That's different, though.
Yeah.
They're sitting in halls and breaking windows.
Yeah, I mean, you guys didn't break any windows.
No broken windows. No broken doors.
Yeah. You're just
no screaming.
Yeah. No.
No yelling.
No. Yeah.
We prayed.
You prayed.
We sang hymns.
Sang some hymns.
That prayer is scary.
Yeah. Now the singing, you know, you could have been charged with singing. We're not the best, you know, hymnologists. So, I mean, the one thing I would confess to.
Might have been off key.
That's where you could have gotten it.
That's right. So that, you know.
It was like me earlier.
Yeah. So you go home. There's not some big thing.
Right.
No windows are broken. No doors are broken. You didn't occupy anything. Everybody went home.
Not a person in interest at that time.
No. Well, weren't there seven people that did get arrested?
Yeah, there were 12 total.
Yeah.
And 8 arrested, 4 ticketed for the minors.
But you were not it. You were not
was
one
a
of
local
them.
Event, sheriff, local sheriff.
Yeah.
Right. And I was not one of them.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So you go home.
Yep.
Then what happens?
Everything's good. Just life is going on as normal.
Right. That's March 21.
Yep. And so October 22, we get the loud banging at the door. FBI open up, and I get drug away to jail. In front of my wife and kids.
Your wife that's right here?
My wife right here with us today.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the four that I was taking to school were held at gunpoint, not a gunpoint, but with long gun, officer full. I mean, there's full riot gear guys, right? I mean, they show up just like the Mark Houck thing.
How many of them?
There were 4 of them, 2 cars, banging on the door, pointing the guns at me. I opened the curtains to look out, 2 guns drawn on me.
That's incredible.
And it's like,
incredible.
You know, what are you guys looking for? Who are you looking for? We're looking for you. They didn't say my name. Who is you?
Right? Yeah.
And anyway, well, you know, you process and do the best you can. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I'm putting myself in handcuffs for the protection of my family.
Yeah.
And they had lethal force warrant, right? They had the right to come in the home and drag me out by my shoelaces if they wanted to. That's what they had. And they were armed to do it.
Wow.
And so I surrendered and put myself in custody. They dragged me away and leave my family crying in the living room.
Right.
Right. And so...
Was there any indication that this might be coming? Any indication at all?
No. Like we talked about, I'm a local business owner in the area. I've been there for, you know, 12 years. The business has been there 12 years. We've been there 17 years in this county.
Yeah.
And a phone call would have said, hey, we'd like to talk to you, would have brought me down to their office and we could have resolved it and, you know, turn myself in or whatever they needed.
Right.
Did you take any, like, brochures from the place where you were at, or
no,
you have nothing in your pockets,
some,
and,
right?
Yeah. Loitering. You left some stuff.
We handed them to individuals.
Okay,
they took ownership. Okay. We didn't leave it on no littering.
Have you tried to meet with those FBI agents since, like one on one conversation?
Not while everything's still in
litigation.
Still in litigation.
Yeah.
So you got taken off. So I mean that's a year and a half.
18 months later. Yeah.
18 months later.
Yeah.
At what time in the morning?
7 o'clock.
7 a.m. Yep.
Getting ready to...
FBI and SWAT gear. All you off in cuffs.
Yep.
You don't know where you're going.
Don't even know what it's about. My wife...
You don't even know what it's about.
My wife, my children, my friends that showed up, my sheriff, my representative, my governor. Nobody in the state of Tennessee knew anything about what it was about or where I was.
Does the FBI have to read you your rights?
So... When I got in the car, once I was in custody, they showed me the warrant. And, of course, I had no glasses. They didn't let me bring anything. All I could see is FACE, F-A-C-E, in capital letters. So I knew at that point that's an abortion charge, the FACE Mm-hmm. Bill that was passed under Clinton in the 90s, right? Freedom of access to clinic entrances.
Okay.
And so I knew at that time it was pro-life related. Okay. I still had no idea what the event was or anything.
But doesn't if you're going to be arrested, don't they have to tell you, hey, this is what you're going to be arrested for legally?
The lawyer's not here. I'd let him answer that. But that's my understanding. That's all the cop shows I ever watched.
Yeah,
I got to read you my rights. You got to tell me.
Right.
And technically, they did. And I think his answer in the past has been, once I was in the car when they showed that to me, that covered their bases. But see, the thing is, I was in the car.
But they cuffed you before you knew what it was about. Exactly.
Like, yeah, there was no freedom. And I could have been shot dead before I knew. I mean, that's the reality of it.
But did they have to talk to your sheriff at all? Was there, they could just come and.
So I asked, we had an hour drive on the way to Nashville from where we are.
Yeah.
And I asked him, say, so y'all call my sheriff about this? No, we didn't bother letting him know. That was their attitude.
Don't legally they have to let your sheriff know?
Well, there's some people you should have on the show to talk about that. Cause I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that in our nation. And I think constitutionally, yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Legislatively and legally, I think there's some things the local sheriff has to do to put them on notice and proactively can do. And I would argue every 4,000 some odd counties in the nation should do
right
at this point because of where we're at. As a nation.
I'm just thinking, before I vote for another sheriff, I'm going to want him to say, listen, and your sheriff should be the kind of guy that should be like, listen, y'all going to come into my backyard. My territory.
My county.
With my people that I protect with my life, and y'all just gonna run rampant around here like some roaches? I'm sorry. I just would be a little upset if I was a sheriff. And have you heard anything from your sheriff at all, you personally?
Well, yeah, so I went down and talked to him. We told him about it. And, you know, it's funny. Before he was elected, he came to our business office, and we had a little talking, you know, with him. And I asked him, I said, hypothetically, you know, federal agency comes into your town.
You actually asked him this.
I asked this question.
Oh, wow.
So, finish the question.
I said, hypothetically, a federal agency comes into town and they're going to come arrest somebody or something. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
He said, probably nothing. He said, not because I don't want to. He said, because I'm not going to know about it.
Okay.
And that was the reality. And so I went, I said, hey, guess what?
Guess what?
Now you know.
It happened.
That it happened. And they're doing that. And we need to figure out a solution.
Is he willing to have that conversation with you?
He did meet with me. Nothing become of it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's just one of those political things. Oh, that won't happen again.
But this is Tennessee, the Nashville, right? Nashville area.
Yeah.
There's a conservative area outside of Nashville.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't it be, if I was a sheriff, this is how I would have handled it.
Sheriff Gabe. I
would have gotten all my deputies to block your driveway to not let the FBI leave and say, hey, we're going to solve this and you guys can get out of my county right now. And then you can call me and set an appointment with my office in about 2 months because that's when I'm going to be free.
And then
we can have a conversation about maybe going to Paul's house.
Oh, man.
No, and that's the point, I think, of the hyperactive raid. Is you don't have time to call 911
to think through all the right
and my wife, Mark, and as fast as she was, she picked up her phone, she was on it and was aware enough to know what's going on, and she got the video footage that really broke the case wide so people can know about it. And I mean, so I think that's almost a better defense than the 911 would have been at that point because they would have been long gone.
Get the footage first, then call. Maybe.
Right. But you're right. I mean, that's in theory, that's what the sheriff should do.
Okay, so can we get to the point with what are you charged with?
Sure. Yeah, this is the interesting part. So FACE is a misdemeanor charge for freedom of access to clinic entrances.
Yeah.
Right? With no violence, it carries a 6-month maximum penalty as a misdemeanor.
Okay.
Right? With violence, 1 year, first offense.
Now, when we talk about misdemeanor, we talk about jaywalking convictions.
Back in the day, back in the 90s, when Christians were blocking abortion clinic doors and shutting down abortion clinics for 2 or 3 days, they were Class B misdemeanors like speeding tickets.
Yeah.
And you go pay $50 and you go home.
It's worth it.
Go back out to the abortion clinic the next day.
Yeah.
Well, Christians were being effective.
Yeah.
Abortions were stopping.
Right.
Clinics were closing. And so the federalities or, you know, whatever, they got together and say, what do we got to do? We're losing this right to kill children. This is very vital to our evil empire. I don't know. You know, what does that mess? What does that meeting look like? Smoke filled room or whatever. But they came up with the FACE bill. First time in history, right? You think about it. There was over 77,000 Christians arrested in the 80s and 90s for pro-life rescues sitting at the abortion clinic doors, blocking doors.
How many?
77,000.
77,000.
The largest civil disobedience movement in American history. Large in civil rights, all of it, right?
Yep.
And and so they said, hey, we're going to make this a felony. We got to make this a federal offense to be able to stifle this, right? And you go back and watch the C-SPAN and all the people that testified and said, this is what's going to happen, and here it is. So that's what happened. So that's charge one. Now, obviously, I didn't do that.
Right.
I didn't sit in front of a door.
Right.
I didn't block anybody. I didn't, I didn't interfere. I didn't intimidate. I didn't do any of the legal language of the FACE bill. So Sanjay Patel got in his head. He's one of the government prosecutors in the DOJ. He wrote an article back in the third quarter of 22 about how they could use this 1880s bill, this law from the 1880s used for the KKK. And it's the KKK Act. And they used it as an anti-lynching, you're blocking people from going to vote.
Mm.
And so they used this law from the 1880s against us as a conspiracy against civil rights.
Mm.
So the civil right is at this point no longer there. At the time of the arrest, no longer there. At the time of the event, we still had Roe on the books.
Yeah.
Right? And so there was no civil right there. But they used the conspiracy to hook myself and another emergency room doctor in the case that was not arrested that day. And they brought both of us in saying we were closely tied to the people that we conspired with them to block these doors and to prohibit people from getting these abortions. Not abortions, sorry, don't use the right language. Reproductive health services. So we don't call it killing children. That won't fly. But, right, I mean, you know how that works. So that's the gist of it.
Wow. Right? And is that what has kicked this up? Because you're potentially imprisoned for a lot longer.
Right. So a six-month misdemeanor becomes a decade-long felony with a conspiracy charge.
So that conspiracy is from that charge is from that 1880s legislation, anti-lynching, anti-KKK. Yeah.
Literally the next paragraph under the paragraph they charge us with says it's illegal to go in the highway with hoods on your head. That's what the law states.
You had a hood on?
No hoodie, man. I didn't wear a hoodie. You know, Hamas and BLM, they were the hoodies. But we didn't. There's a no hoodie rescue.
There's no conspiring for the BLM and Hamas riots, you know, with all the same tents and being funded nationwide. And
Seriously.
Well, projecting, right? I mean, they charge us with what they're doing.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So and so maximum sentence up to.
So 10 and a half years. Could have been 11 in the trial. There was no evidence of violence, which we knew.
Yeah.
But in the D.C. case, as a comparison, one of the pro-abort clinic workers came out trying to beat them with a broom and twisted her ankle.
Yeah.
And so they got charged with violence because they were being beat up and the lady twisted her ankle.
Oh, jeepers.
So that's why they went to jail immediately from the guilty charge. They've been in jail for 8-9 months now. They're sentencing this month, May 14th, 15th, and 17th, for people to be praying about.
Because
there was violence.
Somebody twisted their ankle.
Yeah, somebody that was abusing them.
Right.
This was at an abortion clinic?
Yes.
In Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
So the
same
people
that got charged with the same.
Who are on the other side of the wall are killing human beings in the other room.
Right. Yep.
But because they're chasing away the person
protesters.
Who was trying to save the life of that person and they hurt their ankle, these people are still in jail?
That's it.
Woo! We ain't gonna make it, y'all. We ain't gonna make it.
In the United States.
That is in some insane stuff.
Yeah. And here's, there's three of these cases. There's this Michigan case that won't go to trial till August.
Okay.
They put it off till then. There's our Nashville case and the DC case.
Okay.
And what they've done, because there's guidelines in sentencing that you can't have a disparity in sentencing. So our sentencing was put off until July.
Okay.
So after the D.C. liberal court sentences the violent D.C. case, they'll have sentencing guidelines.
Oh, wow.
And now we can't have sentencing disparity in conservative Tennessee, where we're more likely to have potentially a different level of sentencing.
Wow.
So Michigan and Tennessee will follow the D.C. precedent.
Oh, my goodness. So what's the state of your case currently? So this is what you're charged with.
Sure.
You had the hearing, trial.
Yep. So interesting story. So January 16th, we're scheduled for trial. Heather Idoni is a co-defendant in our case. She's a mom of like 14. She's adopted like 11 children. She's been over in Ukraine doing missions work and stuff. She's an incredible woman. She was in the D.C. rescue in jail, right? So they transport her down. So we know what happens on our opening trial day, the day before the trial hits, this massive winter storm, the biggest I've seen since I've ever been in Tennessee. I didn't know they named winter storms. You know the name of that winter storm? It was Winter Storm Heather.
Oh, so wow.
I thought that was just kind of a hat tip from God for Heather. Yeah, you know, she's right. Spending time in jail.
Wow.
So we were locked out of court for like a week due to snow and stuff. We finally got to trial, a week-long ordeal. And, you know, rules of evidence, we were not allowed. There were three different cameras running full-time throughout this event, showing every aspect of what went on in those hallways and everything that was done. There was about 8 minutes total, maybe, that the jury got to see with the rules of evidence and everything that the judge allowed. So I was leaning against a wall in one piece of evidence, and there were other people standing looking down the hall at something that was going on at the other end. There were a couple people talking. So that is a horseshoe rescue, according to the government witness that was in the hall with us that has since turned against us. And so under her testimony, that was a blocking. That was an intentional blocking. Never mind that in the video, that clinic worker that we were looking at down the hallway that came through that, quote, horseshoe rescue, so excuse me, and walked right through us, and excuse me again, and walked through us again. We were doing nothing but standing in the hall, and I was leaning. I wasn't even in the hall. I was leaning against the wall.
Yeah.
And then there was.
But you couldn't show that video where the employee was able to walk through and back. You couldn't show that part of the video.
Well, they showed that part, but then the still shot they used when they. Specifically, sure. My charges.
Yeah, they're just showing you still, in the hallway.
See, he was in. So they're putting that in the jury's head. He was part of this, right? And it was not, obviously, in any sense.
And you mentioned that you had someone that was part of the rescue who then agreed to testify against you.
Sure. Yep.
And that's part of what where this is coming from, because you're saying that claim came from somebody that had been with you. Decided to testify against you and claimed that you were actually part of a rescue.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. So Caroline Davis is the young lady, 25-ish years old, came on the stand, well-rehearsed, and she's met with the government, the DOJ lawyer, some 25 times, she said, under oath. She testified in the D.C. case. She testified in the pretrial in Michigan.
Oh.
Testified in both. And understand, our case was divided in half. There were four misdemeanor cases and individuals and six of us with felony
charges
with a conspiracy.
Okay.
And so those are two trials. She testified at both those trials. And so that's basically, she got on the stand, and the only thing they have on me, there's no evidence against me. I spoke to the police officers. I spoke to the media after, and I did the proverbial we, right? We came in and sat down at the doors to save babies' lives. And then I also went on in the rest of my little 20-minute interview. We, the Church of Jesus Christ Across the Nation, are against abortion. We, the protesters on the sidewalk, were singing hymns, but you couldn't associate me with those. Just those first eight words is all that the jury was allowed to see of my statements to the press.
Okay.
And so that's
okay. You know. And then has there been a verdict?
There was. Yep. So we went through trial. We were found guilty. All six guilty. Guilty of face. Guilty of conspiracy. And so. We are pending sentencing.
This is for a jury. This is a jury trial.
This was a Tennessee jury.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, one of the things, not only do you have government prosecutors that have a morality question, judges and all the workers, right? But you're in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
The Middle District of Tennessee is the Bible Belt.
Right.
You know, the buckle of the Bible. I mean, this is the most conservative district probably in the nation, at least the second. You know,
yeah.
And yet, with the rules of evidence, with what they were given, with what the judge told them in their orders from the judge, they couldn't see past any of that.
Right.
Right.
I talk about rules of evidence because this is what's the word I'm looking for?
Unbiblical.
Infuriating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen something similar happen here with. Our sticker gate. I don't know if you've heard about this at all, but I mean, Rory and Seamus Wilson have been charged by our local city officials with violating some city ordinance
that's
never been used. Been charged in like 70 years. They dug up something and charged them with this. But part of the jury trial that they faced was they were not allowed to use a First Amendment
argument.
Right.
They were not allowed. Yep. And so there was, I don't know if there were limits on their rules of evidence per se, but that's at least a pretty significant thing where, like, you cannot argue based on the right to free speech or the right to religious expression or any, or right to press, freedom of the, like, the judge just completely said no First Amendment argument will be made in, on this case. And it's, absolutely insane. What were you, I mean, why, what is the argument that the judge is making that says you can't bring these lines of evidence to bear?
So multiple things. That very first one, no First Amendment.
You have the same limit. Yes,
absolutely.
What was the reason for telling you that?
Well, because the FACE bill thought of that. And when the Congress passed it, they specifically said this is not apply to First Amendment activity or religious activity, which it was both.
So, but they've like inverted the whole purpose of that.
Exactly.
It's almost exactly what they did with you when we had the psalm sing arrests, and which was partially because we're not sure Gabe was singing on tune either.
Yeah, that's why
we know he wasn't. He got one ear.
But it, like the Moscow city ordinance that they claimed he was breaking explicitly said this doesn't apply to First Amendment protests.
Yep.
But now, you're saying that the judge is saying because the legislation says that you can't bring in First Amendment defense
because it thought of it already.
Well, it's saying we can't use evidence that would lead to the jury to believe that it was First Amendment.
Yeah.
So we can't use also what's one of the rights of juries or one of the powers of jury. This is a distinction. Nullification.
Yeah.
The government argued to the judge that it was a power of the jury, not a right, because it was not a right of a jury that we could exclude any evidence that might lead them to think that they could nullify this case. See the distinction there? And so, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. Like, think about it. We had three-hour videos. We had 9 hours of evidence. And so what they had to do is, with the rules of evidence, they had to go through and knock that down to just the pieces they wanted that would make their case. So it's not about justice. It's not about what is right and what's going to work, right? It's about how do we win our case, and we go find the precedent, we go find this, and we put it before the judge, and we knock it down, our punch list, down to the evidence we want that proves our case.
No, sorry.
I'm some of this is hard for me to wrap my head around. I just, you know, at some point you got to be wondering, okay, Lord, you're going to have to stand in for us because we ain't got no other way around this. You can't, you know, this is the thing about the system. When it's corrupt, the people who play by the rules are the ones who's really going to lose at the end of when you got a corrupt system. So then you got to figure out, like, how do you engage this? What's your options? Who's doing the sentencing?
The same judge.
Okay. So, okay. Ooh, Lord, help us, Jesus. So then one of the things that I was thinking about, when the young lady who decided to jump on the other side of the aisle and help the other team out, did anybody ask her what they offered her?
Oh, we know what she pled guilty to. All right, so she.
No. When you plead guilty to something like that, we know you got an offer, right? That's, you don't just walk out. You right? Did some talking in the back.
Yeah, absolutely. We turned down 3 offers from the government.
Yeah,
because this is the way the government works. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They overcharge, and then they come back to fit their narrative.
Yeah. Get their
conviction. We have 6 domestic terrorists. They pled guilty, yada, yada. Whatever the narrative is they're painting, right? These pro anti-abortion terrorists out there. And we know, look at all these guilty verdicts, right?
Wow.
And it's something like 80%, you know, of the people that are charged by the federal government plead.
Yeah.
And we just said, on principle, we're going to the mattresses. We're going to court. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to trial. And if you lock us up, God's bigger than that. And I recommend you don't, because he's a God of justice, and we know that he will be just.
Yeah, yeah. He runs the snowstorms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of the gals, one of the individuals that's specifically running this case is someone named Kristen Clark,
right?
Yep. Who has recently run into some legal trouble of her own.
Sure. Yep.
Talk to us about this.
Yeah. So Kristen Clark is the head of the Civil Rights Division. Right. So she had to go Senate confirmation hearings and all the deal. She's very left leaning. There's all kinds of Twitter feeds and stuff out there from her against pro-life work, you know, against crisis pregnancy centers, against the pro-life group, health centers.
Like a very biased individual.
She's very biased. Yeah. She's very racist in her writings. One of her dissertations who are out there was very racist and stuff.
Really?
And just an outrageous character. And so it came out this week that she lied under oath.
When
she was examined by the Senate. She was asked about if she'd ever been arrested for violence or anything. And think about this, charging people with violent crimes.
Right. Uh-huh.
She's the one doing this. And she lied under oath, said she never had been. Well, Daily Signal got the goods on the court documents from where she was arrested for a marital dispute with her husband. And there was a knife involved and cutting and an arrest and
wow.
You know, all kinds of things. And, domestic violence case. She lied and right there on the documents and in person.
So does this have any effect on your case at all? They got somebody in there who is obviously ethically challenged.
Right.
That's a nice way to put it.
Well, I think this is a good point to make. I don't know if it'll directly affect our case.
I think they should throw out all her cases.
I vote for that. But we know, like we said earlier, God is a God of justice. God is not mocked.
Mm-hmm.
And we know everybody involved in this will stand accountable for what they're doing. And just like every 65 million children, like you said, like we talked about, that have died, there will be justice for them.
Right.
And I mean, that's a horrible, terrifying thought. Mm-hmm. If I'm somebody on the other side of this, this equation.
Right.
And so, it'll come out that way one way or the other. There are people calling the Senate, several members of the Senate are calling for a resignation because of it. And it's a big deal. And I think it's very telling that with all the pro-life cases and the lack of prosecution, you got to remember too, we hadn't talked about it this time, but the FACE bill actually protects churches from being interrupted and people doing violence against churches or blocking people from going into churches because that's how they got it, the politics in play when they got it passed in the 90s.
That's how they got the Republicans on board?
Yep, exactly, right?
Uh-huh.
195 churches have been vandalized and attacked since Roe and not one prosecution from Kristen Clark and the Civil Rights Division.
The legislator in New York that got into law the law that Trump is being he's in court for in New York.
Right.
Is the law that kind of extended the ability for someone who is supposedly Me Too to get justice.
Okay.
So instead of, it being a 7-year time frame or something like that, it ended up being like a 30-year time frame.
Giving you longer periods of time to bring up charges against somebody.
Correct.
Instead of the statute of limitations.
That's correct. And that legislator is now being charged with something that happened something like 20, 25 years ago.
That's that Proverbs
and he's
though.
And he's now saying it's unconstitutional.
Paul, can I ask you, as you're going through all of this, I'm guessing the more that you've understood, you know we have a corrupt setup and system because your babies are being murdered.
Yeah.
But as you've been able to work inside of the legal system and the law, your heart and mind about this has must have like really change a little bit to be like, oh, this is bigger than just passing law. We got some stuff underneath. What's been your mindset if you've been working through some of the legal stuff?
Yeah, it's been very revealing. I mean, I knew this at some level, right? You in politics, you're in activism, we're doing pro-life work. You see it. I mean, little things back in the 90s, right? They show a bunch of purple-haired, pierced-up, looking raggedy people sitting at the door of the abortion clinic and say, anti-abortion activists storm the clinics today. Like the B-roll rolling in the background is these pro-abortion people, right?
Yeah.
And just totally reversing the narrative. See, you see stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you're right. This is a whole new level, right? This is seeing that we're corrupt from the bottom up. And not only the corruption from the people that are evil, but the compromise from the middle, right? The jury, the people working. And I think all of us, we've come to a place in our nation where our character's fallen so low. How many times do you hear, well, I just vote my pocketbook?
Yeah.
Right, we just do what's best for me.
Yeah,
and so nobody has the gumption to stand up and recognize that there's a battle going on, and that there's real repercussions for our nation, for our children, and for the future, if we don't get engaged. And certainly the middle, Bible Belt Christian that's just going to church on Sunday and says I'm pro-life, but I wouldn't force my views on other. And this was the testimony Caroline Davis gave in her sentencing. And this is where the narrative comes in. She said, well, I've learned, Your Honor, that it's wrong of me to force my opinions on others.
Mm.
Right. And what is that address? That address, her talking to a mom that's in a crisis pregnancy.
This is the turncoat lady.
This is a turncoat, Caroline. Okay. So she's saying it's wrong of me to interact with that woman and tell her she's wrong. And that's the approved narrative. And this, the judge complimented, you're such an intelligent young woman. You're a model. We really, you know, sounds like the
partiality it, much, judge?
Well, listen, the government being the savior man, she literally said, I have people tell me, usually drug cases, that their arrests saved their life and turned them around, right? Granted, but if you're coming at it and thinking that the government, this is the government's job, is to go arrest people saying turn their life around, that's not justice.
Right.
That's something different.
No.
But the narrative missed completely, and I'll probably get in trouble because my lawyer wasn't there. I shouldn't have gone there. But the narrative here is not talking about the babies. See, she was willing to stand up and say, I was wrong talking to the mom and forcing my opinion on the mom. But no one said, well, what baby doesn't want your opinion forced on them that they should be allowed to live?
Right.
Right. And that's what we miss, yeah. I think.
Yeah. Do you think, what was the offer that you think they came with you probably the same offers?
We got three different offers and we turned them down on principle. So we know what she got. We know what her sentence was and we know what the deal was. It was a Class B misdemeanor instead of a Class C felony or vice versa, whatever the classes are. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV. But Steve knows. And so you can look all, that's all public.
Record, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So you can see that. And we know that she got parole. Did she get parole, yep. She got parole starting from the time of her arrest. So she's already halfway through her 3-year parole term as the court adjourned that day. And that's it.
Yeah.
Right. And she got complimented by the judge for her heartfelt, sincere soul searching. And, you know, she told all about her life and how rough she had a pro-life family. Grew up in.
How horrible.
Yeah. You know, and just.
They let you live?
Yeah. Girl. How about that?
It's got to be hard.
Oh, man.
So, but talking about how hard it was coming up in this generation. And of course, she threw her, not only did she throw us under the bus, she threw her family under the bus.
Yeah.
But think about the thing that wasn't said. What is it like for a young person growing up in a culture that said it's our right to kill 65 million of your peers? I mean, what does that do psychologically? You want to place blame. You want to put the blame at somebody's feet. How about Roe v. Wade? Yeah. How about the unbridled killing of unborn children?
You know, this is really interesting. I think, and I'm not trying to be hard on the young lady. A little bit I am. Yeah, that's not true. But I do want people to think about it as they're thinking about this, because it's easy from this position to be hard until you're in it. Yeah. Like when you're in it, and they're telling you, you're going to get 15 years. You're mm-hmm. going to get 11 years.
Absolutely.
We're going to throw the book at you. Mm-hmm. And they're coming at you, and you don't have the money for a lawyer. You don't have any understanding how this world works. And he thought you were doing something good. And everybody, you can even see it. Yep. It's lined up against you. Like, you don't know what what you're going to do in that moment unless you've been practicing a long time to be there.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. And I'm sure if we sit there and ask you, probably there's a lot of things that have led up to even you fighting in this way. Right.
Sure.
And people don't know that. And this is something that Christians, you got to find. Pastor Toby says this all the time. You better find those small battles first.
Yep.
Where you don't bend and that's you don't break.
That's right.
Because
that's
when the federal government comes after you,
yep.
If you think you're going to be able to stand then and you haven't been practicing, you don't have them kind of muscles, my friend.
That's right.
You ain't developed them kind of muscles yet.
Right.
Yep.
And so this is something I think as Christians, we got to be thinking about, like, ooh, what does it look like to live a certain type of Christian life where I don't bend and break down here or up here or here? Like, we got to start thinking like that.
Yeah. You want the 5-pound weight before you get the 100-pound weight sitting on your shoulders.
Right.
Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, no, you know, God bless her. I hate her. I don't hate her. I say I hate what happened to her.
Yeah.
I pray for her.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not angry and bitter at her.
Amen.
I think she was wrong. I think she would have been, her soul is at risk. Right. Yeah. And that's what reality is she's going to stand in judgment just like everybody else in this case is going to. And she's going to have to answer for that compromise or that whatever her motive was.
Yeah.
And I hate that her life was that hard. I hate that she came to this situation and she came into this unprepared. She was counseled not even to do it and didn't listen to that counsel. So that's the reality of it. And we all have to live with that. We all live with our choices.
Yeah.
I think, Knox, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is one of the things that really, if I had a message, you know, to the church is we need, as Christians, we ought to understand it's more than just going to church on Sunday, but we're called to stand, right? And if we don't know how to stand, then we better find a way to practice standing and go figure out what it is we can do. We don't have to go be activists,
yeah.
But there are 1,000 things a week that we can compromise in or we can stand.
That's right. I tell men, young men, I do a lot of premarital counseling. We have a lot of young people getting married around here. And one of the things I tell them in the first session usually is one of the spiritual gifts that God has given men in particular is the gift of stubbornness. And we frequently make fun of it because sometimes we have the flesh, and the flesh makes us stubborn about the wrong things. But there is a real gift in men who are stubborn about the right things.
Yeah, that's right.
And the particular thing I press upon them is we always begin with just the gospel and establishing a Christian marriage on the gospel. And I talk about making sure that they are committed to confessing their sins and forgiving one another. Like you can get a whole lot of other things wrong in a marriage, but if you're committed to confessing sin, staying in fellowship, forgiving one another, you can have a happy home. And so I tell the man in particular, I said, this is what I want you to be stubborn about. Mm. I want you to be stubborn about staying in fellowship with your wife. I want you to be stubborn about having no backlog of sin, no backlog of unconfessed sin, of bitterness, of resentment, none of that at all. Be stubborn about that. Be hard-headed about that.
Yep.
That's your spiritual power. That's your spiritual gift. But that's that's the 5-pound weight.
Yeah.
I mean, we are under an avalanche of corruption that we have not stood up to because we are under an avalanche of guilt and shame and sin.
Sure.
And if you're not free of that, you can't stand up to the feds. You're not going to stand up when you need to stand up, when it matters, if you haven't been standing up to your own sin, to the sin in your marriage, to the sin in your family.
Yep. Well, think about, spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
And the reality of angels and demons and the reality of what's going on in our nation. Even Tucker, I mean, for all his stuff, Tucker Carlson has said that the stuff that's going on, it can't be man-made.
Yeah.
Nobody's that smart. It's just too much evil.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's got to be something spiritual driving it. Yeah. And the principle the principle you're saying is you can't defeat what you are.
That's right.
And so if you're organizing your life by the demon of Moloch or greed or, mammon or whatever, and those are the principles that you organize your life by, you're not going to stand against them and think you're going to have a victory.
That's right.
They're going to crush you like a bug.
Amen. Well, and I mean, this is how you win. The peace of God passes all understanding. And so when your enemies are coming at you and being unjust, and you could go to prison in July.
Yep.
In June or July, whenever that sentencing is.
Yep.
But you have a peace that they can't take away from you. That's how you win, is you fight with that peace.
Absolutely.
You might not get earthly justice here on this point, but you will absolutely get heavenly justice from our Lord. Both sides will.
Yep.
You will, and the judge that's about to do this.
Sure.
And it's the love of God that can't separate you.
Yeah.
In any of this.
I think it was, I don't remember, maybe most people have said this, but I want to say Pastor MacArthur, John MacArthur, might have said this when he was talking about the COVID stuff, but he was like, I've had a great ministry here, but I figure if God wants me to have a prison ministry, I'm ready for that too.
Yeah,
that's like, I'm about to preach Paul and Silas this coming Sunday, being arrested in Philippi, and there they are, and they're like, oh, I guess we better sing. So right. you might want to be working on the music in case. I got to read this ad. Van Gelder Technologies is a U.S.-based custom software development company specializing in cross-platform mobile applications, web applications, and desktop programs. Leveraging open-source frameworks, they quickly and efficiently build custom software solutions that are tailor-made to fit your specific needs. There's no need for new Christendom companies to be content with offering subpar mobile or web experiences. Van Gelder Technologies can help you build better software for the glory of God. You can learn more, view examples of their work, or get in touch at www.vangelder.tech. That's VANGELDER.TECH. Vangelder.tech. Van Gelder Technologies, where technology and tradition meet.
Paul, last words with you. How can we be praying for you and your family?
Yeah, you bet. I mean, to the victory, that was one of the things I've told my family, is you got to keep that peace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anytime you let the enemy come in and ruffle you, right, you get that. So pray for all the defendants in the case. They are out there. There's a live site news out there that has all the defendants on it. FreeHeatherIdoni.com. I'll throw that out there. She's the one that's in the DC case, the Michigan case, and our case, and she's incarcerated today. But I just say, you know, pray for us. Pray for those involved. Pray for the judge. Pray for the prosecution. Pray for the whole situation. You know, pray for our nation. We're in it up to our eyeballs, and there's a spiritual battle to be won. And just, I think, you know, pray for each of us as we go to sentencing July 2nd. That we'd represent Christ well, right? Yeah. He promises to give us the words to speak. We'll have an opportunity to talk to the judge. And, you know, we'd love to have favor and stay out of jail, right? That'd be great.
For sure.
But ultimately, we want God's story to be told, and he tells the best stories, and he tells the stories that will advance the kingdom. And so that's what we want out of us.
Is there a possibility of a countersuit?
That's our hope, yeah. I mean, and... You know, not because we're mad and angry, but we don't do it to other people, right? Hold them accountable.
Not out of animosity.
How about just justice?
No, yeah. but justice. Right. But
how about that?
But sometimes in a world where this is the only language people speak, you have to speak the legal language, and you have to chain up this injustice that's happening.
Sure.
So after sentencing,
we'll go to appeal.
Okay.
Immediately, we can't appeal until sentencing.
Got it.
And so that's the next step.
Okay.
To go to the Sixth Circuit.
Okay.
And we can pray for favor there.
Okay. But then at some point, a countersuit would be possible.
If we win, then yes, we definitely would come back.
Yeah.
And go through all the different pieces.
Yeah.
You know, of this puzzle.
Yeah.
Watch in June, July, when sentencing happens, if they get sentenced to prison time, which based on everything, it looks like that to me is what the judge will do. The judge could say, you'll go to prison pending an appeal, or the judge could say, you're going to go to prison regardless if you appeal.
Right.
And then you have to go through the appeals process. That's what happened in D.C. That's what she's in prison.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the argument for that was because there was, quote unquote, violence.
Well, there's that. But there's also the sentencing aspect of it when you file an appeal. So if you look just politically nationally, Peter Navarro is in jail or went to jail for 30 or 45 days or whatever his sentence was on a very similar charge as Steve Bannon. Okay. Or Peter Navarro. Did I say Steve?
You know who it is.
Peter. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so Bannon's out on appeal. Navarro had to report and go to jail. It's wholly at the whim of the judge. The judge has complete control over that. Yeah. And I didn't give my website, paultn.substack.com. Paul TN, like Tennessee, .substack.com. Yeah. I continue to try to write. I don't grow great at keeping it up, but when there's big things, I generally get
update people
out.
There.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we go forward.
And be praying for guys like Paul because they're the tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to believe it.
This is not going to stop.
Yeah. No.
And it's only going to get worse here in America for all these pro-lifers. I mean, how many pro-lifer cases could they go after right now?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, let's make an example out of, you know, D.C., Michigan, and Tennessee. Yeah.
Right.
And we're just getting started. So,
Really appreciate you, Paul. Thank you very much. Yep.
Thank you, guys.
God bless. God bless your family.
Amen.
Y'all be in prayer. If you're single, get married. If you're married, have you some kids. And if you have kids, go baptize them. Until next time, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Go fight, laugh, and feast. This is Cross Politics.